You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, or follows by DOEE. Today, we'll be discussing why I now prefer telephoto lenses for cityscapes, some general news updates, and what I've been up to, which we will get into now. So we've had a bit of a break from the rain here in Sydney, so I actually got to finally go out and shoot since daylight savings has ended, and I had quite a bit of fun. I'll probably go into more detail on this later, because it's, you know, why the main topic is why I now prefer telephoto lens for cityscapes. But otherwise, I might be able to do a simple sort of review, a quick review of the 100 to 400 soon. I have been using it for cityscapes, and I also am likely going to like a zoo sort of place next week. Well, technically at the time of release, it would have already been gone. I would have already gone there. So as long as I get a decent amount of photos from there, I think I'll just quickly do a review of that lens as well. Not too good, but I hurt my leg the other day taking photos. I don't know how. Usually every time I take my filters off my lens, I will spin the camera around on the tripod, having it face me. But for some reason to that day, which was technically yesterday at the time of recording, on the Saturday, I was removing my CPL from my Nissi filter holder and it sort of just fell forward and it fell down into these bushes. They're very small, but it's more just, you know, it did fall down a bit. So the only way to get there is I had to climb over this sort of waist-high fence to, you know, go grab it and then climb back over. Climbed over, kind of hesitant. I kind of kicked at the bushes a bit. You know, I'm always worried about snakes or something. Even though summer's over, we're, you know, more than halfway through autumn. But I did that anyway, grabbed the filter, that was no issue, wasn't damaged, hope anyway. And then as I go to jump back over, I don't know how, there must have been a sharp bit on the fence just full stabbed me in the leg. So I was tempted to take more photos at that point because I was still had everything set up and all the building lights were starting to come on, but my leg was bleeding so heavily and hurting, so I was like, I have to go home. So driving home, I had to pretty much hold the tissue on my leg to stop the bleeding while I drove. Thankfully, not too sore today, but yeah, otherwise that cut my shooting short a bit, but otherwise I got the shots that I wanted to get, so I'm happy with that in that regard. Sad news, you know, Easter break is almost over here. Here we get public holidays for Easter Friday. I don't work weekends, so that doesn't really matter, but also Easter Monday. And I had the prior 2 days off as well, the 13th or the 14th, so I had a nice 6 day long weekend. Very sad it's coming to the end. I feel like it flew by. I swear I could probably take like a month off and just sit at home and do nothing. I'd still be happy and it would still seem too short, but it will be good to sort of get back into a routine again. I think that's the main thing I feel lost about, is not having that routine. Usually every day wake up a set time, although I still wake up a set time, you know, it's more the exercise, workout, work to this time, do this to this time, like everything's set, so everything's a bit of a mess in that regard. So it'll be good to have that as well. And we got our engagement ring, haven't proposed or anything yet. My girlfriend knows, she's seen it, but still need to take a good photo of that ring. But the ring box they gave us, I don't really like because it has a light built in, so it completely puts off the exposure. So that for me is an issue. So once I can get that, a new ring box, cheap one off eBay or AliExpress, just to take photos with, then I can finally take a nice photo, unless I come up with some composition that I like more. Because everything I tried, I didn't like the look of, mainly because I felt like the 85 isn't long enough. That's where I really want something like a 100mm macro, 1-150, that kind of stuff would be really ideal for a macro. But sadly, you know, it is what it is. I have what I have and I can't afford the IRF 100mm. Think of anything, I was going to go for a mid $2,000 lens, it would likely be the IRF 14-35. But yeah, that's it. On to the news. So the first news story is a Samyang AF 35mm f1.4 FE Mark II lens has been announced for Sony E-mount. So Samyang has announced its second generation lens, which has autofocus for both full frame and crop sensor Sony E-mount cameras. The lens is constructed of 11 elements in 9 groups, including 2 aspherical elements and 2 high refractive index elements. It has a minimal focusing distance of 9.5 feet, or otherwise known as 29 centimeters. The optical elements in the lens use what Samyang touts as an advanced coating technology, results in superb image clarity even in challenging light conditions. It has a linear stepping motor, so an STM motor, 9 aperture blades with a range of f1.4 to f16. The lens features a focus hole button and a custom switch, which, you know, has been pretty common with the Samyang lenses. And the AF 35mm f1.4 Mark II has a weather sealing in 4 locations, which should provide decent level of resistance to dust and water. There's no release date so far, according to the article from Petapixel, but it was updated to have a price of $799 US. And images do look quite nice with this lens. At $799 US, I believe it's still quite a bit cheaper than the G Master 35-1.4, which is about double the price. I think that one's $1,399 if there's no specials. It doesn't mention the weight of this lens, which to me is a big factor. If I really wanted the 35-1.4, couldn't afford the G Master, this, along with the Sigma, might be a good option, but I think that G Master is just such a nice lens, it will be hard to pass up on if you shoot Sony, that is. Also for the E-mount, Sony has announced the 16-35 f4 PZG series power zoom lens. So this is part of their G series, for which you don't know. So technically you got your normal lenses, say like your 35mm f1.8, then you have your G series lenses like this, the 20mm, that sort of thing. And then you have the G Master, which are the highest end lenses. So this lens weighs only 353, which makes it the world's lightest f4 wide zoom lens, which is quite a good achievement. It's constructed of 13 elements in 12 groups and features two AA lenses, one a spherical lens and one ED spherical lens, one super ED lens and one ED lens. So this means that nearly half of the elements are some specialized nature to control its rendering, aberrations, distortion, and only two of them are paired to a group. A minimum focusing distance of 0.28 and 0.24 meters at both ends respectively, so 24 centimeters, 28 and 24 centimeters. It has 7 blade aperture blades. The power zoom is driven by Sony's XD linear motor technology, but otherwise the lens in general has two XD linear motors, which is quite impressive considering how small and light this lens is, how much is in there. It will be available in July for $1,200. From what I've seen from the first impression videos on YouTube from a lot of YouTubers, it does look like a great size and weight. Images look quite promising as well. Price-wise, it is quite a bit more compared to what, I can't even remember how much their 16-35 f4, but that lens was definitely not great, that Zeiss one. It had a lot of issues. It was quite weak on the long end, around 35mm. So if, as long as this one performs better on the long end and that sort of stuff, you know, should be a great option for those who do want something small, light, but then, you know, don't want to fork out for the G Master, which is honestly an amazing lens, which one I own. I'd be curious how much cheaper this lens would have been if it wasn't a power zoom. I'm wondering if that's more of a video feature focus thing, because I can't see power zoom being that useful for stills, but who knows, maybe there's a use for it that I don't know about, so could be that. I'm not sure if anyone here that listens could afford this. I know I certainly can't, but the Nikon Z800mm f6.3 VR-S lens has been announced. So while it's still a hefty lens, it is 40% lighter and 16% shorter than its F-mount counterpart, thanks to in part to the use of phase Fresnel front element. It's constructed of 22 elements in 14 groups. The lens weighs 5.25 pounds, otherwise known as 2.385 kilograms, with a reduced footprint of 5.6 inches by 5.2 inches compared to its F-mount predecessor. Nikon equipped the lens with a rubber gasket that keeps dust, dirt, and moisture out of the moving parts of the lens, although thorough dust and drip resistance is not guaranteed in all situations or under all conditions. It has 5 stops of image stabilization. The lens features 4 LFN2 buttons, so custom function buttons, I believe, and one LFN, to which a variety of controls can be assigned from the menu, including subject tracking, AF lock, and playback. The control ring also can also be assigned to adjust ISO, aperture, and exposure compensation. I'm really liking how many people are adding the control ring. So now Canon were the first ones to do it, as far as I know anyway. Nikon seem to be doing it now, and even third parties like Samyang have started adding control rings. So it's only Sony that doesn't add them. Sony really needs to give up on the horrible aperture rings and just add control rings, considering the control ring can do the same or even more, does the exact same or better, so there's no real reason to use an aperture ring over a control ring. The images from this lens were obviously quite nice, but considering that it'll be available starting later this month for $6,500 US, that is quite a bit of money. And also, I forgot to mention, it is also compatible with Nikon's TC 1.4x and 2x teleconverters, which can turn the lens into a 1120mm or 1600mm lens respectively. Now, as I mentioned, yeah, quite a pricey lens. Image quality looks very good. I could imagine this, anyone that can afford a Nikon Z9 would probably be very happy with this. It's interesting how Nikon's really giving great options on the higher end. You know, whether, say, Canon and Sony have great options on the more budget, Nikon seem to be very aggressive with their pricing on the high end. This lens is an example. The Z9 is an example. If they continue to do that, you know, that's more than the more profitable areas. They will hopefully get a lot of good sales out of it as well. And last but not least, Nikon Z9 update is so big, it could have been a whole new camera. So with this, there was a lot of video updates. As you know, I don't really care for video, so I don't discuss it. I mainly talk about the stills. So in terms of stills, the camera can now capture a burst of images up to a second before the shutter is fully pressed. The logic behind this is obviously you don't know when the action is going to be. So if you anticipate some action, but you haven't started, you know, capturing it yet, this is where that comes in. Nikon has also added a new menu option called Motion Blend. This feature, which will be found in the retouch menu, creates an in-camera overlay from a series of subject movements from continuous shooting into a single picture in camera. So think of it like how Canon have their focus stacking. This sort of works very similar. In the example on the article, if you look at it, you can see, you know, the runner running and doing a long jump. You can blend all those photos into one so you can see the transition of them running up, jumping and landing, that sort of thing. Nikon is also adding 20 types of custom wide area AF selection patterns, which gives photographers more control over which part of the frame they want to focus on. Firmware 2.0 also enhances AF stability, tracking performance, and subject detection in low light situations. Additionally, when reviewing images, users now have the option to skip to the first shot in a given burst, finally for capturing star trails and long exposures. Firmware 2.0 enhances the Z9's long exposure to display to include a live count of the exposure time, sort of like what the bulb timer does with Canon. Other non-AF related, so you got the optional increase to 120 frames per second on the electronic viewfinder, so that'll help with your motion and your refresh rate. Auto exposure has been enhanced to have more stable exposure with human faces, such as when subject turns away from the camera and then faces it again, or where the composition changes. Improved prioritized viewfinder monitor mode gives a familiar shooting and review flow, prefers sub-center and has been added to custom menu, improving the operation of sub-selector. Improvements in auto white balance, even when the scene changes rapidly, and adjustments to choose for, color temperature and presets white balance, manual white balance, sorry. A new custom setting which focus point selection speed allows users to adjust the speed that AF points can be moved through the frame. For confirmation of high speed shooting, visual shutter release indicators appear clearly on the display and real life viewfinder. Enhanced memory set recall function enables instant recall of several focus positions. Recalling shooting function hold has been added to the conventional recalling shooting functions, enabling the users to maintain the recall function without continually pressing a button. The option to switch focus / control ring roles helps photographers who don't need manual focusing employing the control ring. And this will be available from April 20 free of charge. So this is obviously very, very significant. Too bad they weren't able to do something like this with the Z6II or Z7II, that sort of stuff. But I assume it's probably a processor thing. This being their flagship camera would have a much more beefier, higher end processor, which is probably what helps them to deliver all this through a firmware update and not have to just, you know, make it a brand new camera. Otherwise, that is it for the news, and we will get on to our main topic. So as I mentioned in the start on personal updates, I've been out shooting again. So my first day, I wanted to visit a location close to my house with the IRF 16mm. Back before, you know, I used to love the wide angle look. When I first started shooting, I would use it for everything. Doesn't matter, food, photography, people, anything. I loved ultra wide angle for absolutely everything I possibly could. But that's, you know, changed in recent times. So for me, I hadn't owned a ultra wide angle lens for a long time. So after switching over from Sony, the widest I had was the 35mm. Even for a period before I swapped over from Sony, the widest I had was 24. So, you know, I wasn't used to that really wide look, because if you're not familiar, the difference between, say, 16 and 20mm is very significant and very visible. Whereas the difference between, say, 100 and 105, you could barely notice the difference. The wider the lens is, the more noticeable, or wider the focal length is, the more noticeable that difference would be. And because I hadn't used a UWA for so long, it's, you know, I forgot how, you know, wide they are, for lack of better terms. I've got to the point where I don't feel like, you know, using them is something I could use all the time. And I used anything from 35 up to, you know, 400 millimeters a lot more. So maybe that's just my current preference of what I like more, or it's just literally is what, you know, I like more. But I would still say, just to clarify, UWA lenses still have a place. You do need the right time, right location. So for example, you'll see in the article, so rather than my usual podcast where it's just the show notes and links and that's it, if you go to, you know, thephotographyenthusiast.com, click the link in the show notes, you'll see I've actually written an article with images for this, because I was initially just adding the photos for my blog post on photosbydoee.com and, you know, going on about that, writing it from that sense, and I realized we'll make a good podcast topic, and because I'd already mostly written it, I decided to use that for TPE as an article instead. But as you'll see in the pictures, like the photo of QVB, it's a 4x5 portrait, you know, vertical orientated photo. 16 millimeters can work really well if you have the right scene, still 100%. But in general, I feel like now if I'm going to photograph an area, I would rather look for somewhere or a location that I can shoot it from with a tele lens rather than go for the wide. The main reason for that is, which is why I will discuss that now in the main topic. So to me, there's certain reasons why you would go for a tele over a wide angle. So the first one is different perspective. So tele lenses allow for compositions not possible that, you know, with wide angle lenses. So for example, in the image, the photo in this exact same section, I have two images there. If I wanted to get similar compositions, it would not be possible because there is water in the way. If you look at the image of the, you can see the W Hotel from a distance, that's the one shot at 400 millimeters. Although it looks like I could just go, say, down on that jetty in the bottom left of the image and use a wide angle, like a 16 millimeter from there, it would not actually be possible because the way images look through a tele lens with the compression and all that is not the exact same it would with a wide angle. What you don't realize in that image is you have a lot of other buildings in front of that. So you wouldn't even, you could kind of see the W Hotel, but it would not look the same with a wide angle lens. Because if you're not familiar, wide angle lenses tend to push, stretch subjects out, make them look further away, whereas telephoto lenses compress everything and make it look a lot closer. And not to mention also all the water in the way. So for both those images is, you know, I don't even know what the harbor is, what you want to call it, the harbor, ocean, sea, whatever it is, river, all of that is between me and the subject. So shooting with a wide angle, I number one, wouldn't be able to get that same look. I wouldn't be able to stand there because there's, you know, water. Even if I went on a boat, that would be moving, so I wouldn't be able to do a long exposure. All the shots would be completely different if they're from a wide angle. So it allows you to get different perspectives. And sometimes, you know, say you want to shoot one location, you may not be able to enter there close enough. It might be private property. There might be fenced off, that sort of stuff. Whereas with a tele lens, you can find somewhere a bit higher up, much further away, zoom into like whatever you need to, 100, 400 millimeters, whichever you need, and you can get the shot that way still. Also, you'll find sometimes maybe if you're shooting with a tele lens and you're further away, it allows you to shoot from different angles and you could get better lighting. You'll get, you know, sunset behind you from one location with a tele, whereas the only reasonable spot to shoot with a wide angle, the sun might be behind you, so it wouldn't be as dynamic lighting. So in that sense, you can get a lot of different perspectives when shooting with a telephoto lens. And I know what I used to think as well, which is incorrect, you know, if some people think, you know, if you're shooting with a tele lens, you can't shoot wide, but you can still technically shoot wide in a sense. So what I mean by that is, although you're not using a wide angle lens, you can still have sort of a more wide composition and wide framing, really utilize negative space in the sky, water, that kind of stuff. In the article, you see an image I took of this building in Redfern. So there's, you know, a lot of space. I wanted to show what the storm was like above it. So that's why I had all that space. Even though it's a tele, I don't necessarily have to completely fill the frame, although I can, but you still have the option to frame it wide, but you just have a different look. If you use a wide angle lens and have a lot of that negative space, you'll find it looks very different because of the fact that it's stretching out to make it look further away than it is. Whereas with a tele lens, you know, when you're framing wide, everything does look compressed, but you still got that space. It has a completely different look, which sort of still comes up the other one. And the fact is, even if, you know, for example, you want to take a photo of a landscape or a cityscape and you only have, say, 70 to 200 or 100 to 400 with you, and even at the widest focal length, say 100 millimeters, it's not wide enough to capture the whole scene you want. You can still do a panorama, which is what I tend to do with tele lenses. When you do that panorama, I personally prefer to do it in vertical usually and just, you know, pan across the scene. You'll get a wide image, but it will still have that telephoto, more compressed look to it. So it'll look, you know, completely different to if you were to do it with a wide angle lens. And because the telephoto lenses have less distortion compared to a wide angle, you'll find that you can usually stitch them together without any issue compared to using a wide angle lens. And depending on what type of shooting you do, one other good point is with a telephoto lens, you can crop in, but with a wide angle lens or any technically lens, you can't crop out. So what I mean by that is if you're shooting somewhere, say further back, you know, with a wide angle lens and you take your photo, but you know, you wish that you could have got a wider look for it. Technically, the only option you have with a wide angle lens is to move back. If you've already shot that image, you can't make it wider. You can't crop it out. Whereas if you're shooting from a further distance with a telephoto lens, you can take a few images. You can take, assuming we were using zooms here as well, one at 200 millimeters, one at 250, one at 300, all different distances, all different composition. And then, you know, whichever one you want, you could either crop in or zoom in a bit more, which you can't do technically if you're using a wide angle prime, you know, up close, or if you're shooting at your max wide angle, you can't go further back. So because of that, like I said, you know, for me, although I don't crop, sometimes I do like, oh, I wish I did this sort of look, did that sort of look. What I've been doing a lot with telephoto lenses is shooting quite wide as a panorama and then cropping in, mainly because when you're shooting so wide as a panorama, it's not like your usual 20 megapixels. You'll find the images are usually 100 megapixels, that sort of stuff, or more usually. And you can even get the same 4:3 aspect ratio. So what you could do is, hypothetically, with a telephoto lens, do a really wide panorama. And then when you're doing your crop, just select the correct ratio. I think it's 4:3 for a normal image on a mirrorless or DSLR camera. Do the 4:3 ratio and just crop it to what you want. So you technically looks just like a normal image in a single frame, but it's much larger resolution. You still got that compressed tele look. Everything's a lot larger in that sense. And yeah, you get your image that way. So there's a lot of options when you're doing that, shooting from a much further distance and then zooming in with a telephoto lens. Some might say, oh, this, you know, with a wide angle, you could do the same thing, just get a wide angle zoom. But as I said, it comes down to the fact, the look of a tele versus a wide angle. There's something about that compression look that I like so much more. It looks so much better compared to, you know, the wide look, the distortion, that sort of stuff. So each person will be different. Each person will have their own preference. As I mentioned, I'm not saying that I don't like telephoto lenses anymore. It's more just that I mean, wide angle lenses, I feel like they're more, for me personally, niche lenses now that I can only use in certain situations, not every single situation. I do like to fill the frame quite a bit more, which I feel like I can do with tele lenses more. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, that's it for this episode. If you'd like to read the full article, which isn't too long, it's a fairly short article, it's just got some images and examples, might better help visualize what I'm trying to say, head over, you can check in the show links. Otherwise, head to thephotographyenthusiast.com, which you also have all the other episodes, reviews, a few tutorials, should honestly be more tutorials, but yeah. Otherwise, if you want to see my personal work, you can find me at photosbydlwe.com. Otherwise, my Twitter is the same, photosbydlwe. I mainly post on Flickr and my website. To be honest, my website, the most, I post there most up to date, and I'm very slow with Flickr, Twitter, that kind of stuff. But yeah, otherwise, thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to subscribe, please, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.